is America with Rich Valdez, powered by Politiweek.com.
And Rich Valdez is with us, former Christie administration official.
You worked for Chris Christie, you've been in politics, done a lot of public service stuff.
Rich Valdez, columnist now with the Washington Times.
This is America.
Richie V, you're on the air with the nation.
The nation.
This is America. With your host, Rich Valdez.
What's up, America? I am Rich Valdez, Valdez with an S, at Rich Valdez on all of the social media, 17 blocks from Madison Square Garden, New York City, your liberty-loving Latino amigo. And check this out. We've got a story that's coming out of Alabama. This is very unfortunate. The police are reporting that 8 suspects recorded the kidnapping, the torture, and the rape of a mom. This mom of one, they recorded all of it before they ultimately killed her. And this is incredibly unfortunate, but this young Alabama mother was allegedly abducted before being tortured, sexually assaulted, and killed by a group of 8 suspects in this horrific attack, and they filmed the whole thing. Crazy. The mother of one, she arrived at the home of one of the suspects, 24-year-old Brandon Pope, to hang out with friends on February 25th. This is according to WBRC News. However, she was allegedly being set up to be raped and murdered. Wow. This is so sad. The plan started to unfold. The video shows Miss Jackson, I believe is the victim here. She was naked outside with a 25-year-old Tasia Lewis beating her and a 23-year-old Sanaya McCall kicking her. After that, McCall can allegedly be heard directing the others to put her in the trunk. Jackson was reportedly able to contact her mother, Gail Maddox, around 8 a.m., writing, "Send the police, apartment 3, being held hostage, don't call." She also sent her location to her sister. This is horrific. Unbelievable. Several calls were made. None of them were answered. "Hey, you." It's the last thing she wrote. Unbelievable. Police believe the suspects transported Ms. Jackson to Lewis and McCall's apartment, where more violent acts were allegedly being recorded. Birmingham investigators say that Ms. Jackson was handcuffed and continually assaulted by the group, including being spat upon, slapped, and pistol whipped. According to Detective Green, videos of the young mother being forced to perform sex acts were even posted on social media. In the footage, the suspects can be allegedly heard telling Jackson that she's about to die. This is so scary. Jackson's body was found at an illegal dumping site the next day with a gunshot wound to the back of her head. WBRC reported that one attorney described the location as Dead Man Road. Prosecutors have charged Giovanni Clapp, 23 years old, Blair Green, 25 years old, with felony murder, first-degree kidnapping, and first-degree sodomy. McCall got hit with felony murder, first-degree kidnapping, first-degree sodomy, while Lewis was charged with only felony murder. Jeremiah McDowell, 18 years old, Francis Harris, 25 years old, and Mr. Pope were all charged with capital murder during a first-degree kidnapping, as well as capital murder during a first-degree sodomy. Ariana Lachey Johnson, 23 years old, was the last suspect to be caught by the Birmingham police 9 days after Jackson's body was found. She was also charged with felony murder and kidnapping. Police Chief Scott Thurman said the alleged actions of the group were some of the worst he'd seen in his entire career, saying, quote, "These actions displayed by these defendants were barbaric and have no place in society." And that was echoed by the Jefferson County District Attorney. "The senseless and inhumane treatment perpetuated on a young," her first name is Mahogany Jackson, "were very disturbing and very violent. Her heartbroken mom, Gail Maddox, what am I going to tell my granddaughter when she asked for her mother?" She posted alongside a photo of Jackson's little girl, adorable little girl. Barbaric, absolutely barbaric. And it leads me to ask the question. There's always been crime, right? There's always been a Jack the Ripper type rapist at one point or another in our history. Not that it's okay, not that it should be accepted, but it's known. But I can't remember another time in my life, and I'm sure it's happened, but I just don't remember, where 8 young people, 25 and under, kidnapped a 25-year-old girl, tortured her, and did all these things to her. I mean, again, I'm sure they were mad at her for something, But what could she have possibly done to meet a fate like that, where eight people beat you and kidnap you and sexually abuse you and put it on video and then kill you? I mean, what'd she do to them? I'm guessing the answer is probably nothing. And we'll find out as that trial begins to unfold. But right now, there's no motive being reported, just this heinous crime. And for me, it opens the larger conversation to ask, what is wrong with society? Why do people think it's okay to kill other people? Why do people think it's okay to mistreat other people? Listen, I have my days, right? I can get rude and nasty on the road. I can have my little bursts of, miniature road rage. I can occasionally get upset at a restaurant if the service isn't right. But for the most part, I tend to tip really well, and I try to be very, very nice to those people because my kids have worked in restaurants. But this doesn't fit in my head, how eight people, young people, decide to pull this plot together to, you know, were they hanging out, drinking, and say, hey, let's call so-and-so and let's kill her. I mean, absolutely insane. And as I know more about this, I'll bring you up to speed. But ultimately, the big issue here, the underlying issue, is there's a lack of appreciation for life. There is no value for humanity. People don't respect people, so they're willing to kill them. There's no value in the life of another person. And I see this more and more, and lamentably, I see it with young people more often than not. And it's heartbreaking, right? It really is heartbreaking. You see, you know, I was in the airport the other day, and I just saw people cutting the line and cutting the line and cutting the line. And hundreds of people were getting cut, and they were all making faces, but nobody dared say a word. Because they were afraid that they'd be labeled something, some sort of bigot, if they said something to the person cutting them. It's not cool. Ultimately, we have to respect one another, right? And I feel like I'm preaching to the choir here. I know you guys know that. But I feel like society's really going left here, right? We're really losing track of who we're supposed to be as a people, as humanity, right? It used to be like compassion was you're driving down the road, saw somebody stranded on the side of the road, you'd help them. Now it's like, let me go out of my way to run that person over on the side of the road. I mean, it just the leaps and bounds we've taken in the wrong direction are just astounding to me. It's so unfortunate, and I hate to see it. But this is where we are. And politics plays a role in it. But I think ultimately all of this stuff boils down to the church. When the church becomes a not cool place, when you get more and more reports saying that, you know, under 50% of people are involved in the church or claim to be Christians or whatever religion that they're with, but the stat that I'm citing is specifically for Christians, and that happened in Europe recently. I think in the United States it's a slightly higher number, but it's still on the decline. Some will make the argument, look, I'm not into organized religion. That's fine for you. I'm just saying, to just be a good person, a good atheist, a good non-violent, caring, kind person. I don't care what you believe in, as long as you believe in not killing the person next to you. It seems like we've really gotten away from that. And so many of the policies and teachings that come out of the radical left, right? I don't see anybody on the Trump side of the aisle saying that we should go killing people, raping people, spitting at people. Now, of course, somebody's going to say, do you hear people on the AOC side of the aisle saying that? No, I don't. But I do hear a lot of rhetoric where we don't care about society. We don't care about America. There was a really good clip, and I'll end with this. I wish I had it to play it for you. But it was on Instagram, and there's an interview going on. And the interviewer says, you know, why are you here? And the interviewer just goes on about these communist, this rant about the problem is America. The problem is the West. We have to destroy America. We have to destroy the West. When you have that type of radicalized thinking, the only next step in the United States will be exactly what Israel saw with Hamas. People willing to die because of their hatred of what you stand for and what you believe. And that's exactly what happened here. These people believed in themselves and their egos and their pride way more than they believed in this girl's right to live. And that's why she's dead today. Mahogany Jackson. All right, folks, coming up, we're going to talk about Fat Joe. He copped a pair of the Trump 45 sneakers, the Never Surrender High Tops, in gold, and then he got tore up on social media by his own people. That's the second time I've seen Fat Joe get roasted. And this one I think I've got his back, but we'll have that discussion. We're also going to talk a little bit about music as well. I wanted to talk a little bit about my favorite genre, in addition to hip-hop, is reggaeton. And there's some, interestingly, there's an article on reggaeton in the Washington Post. And, of course, I want to talk about communism and what that leads to. So stick with me, folks. We got a lot to cover. Don't go anywhere. I'm Rich Valdez.
This is America.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like a gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
This is America.
He's brown, he's bald, and he's breaking it down.
Oh, he's so handsome. What's his name?
Rich Valdez.
All right, America, welcome back. And Yahoo News has a very interesting article. Listen to this headline in conjunction with the BBC. Cuba is asking the UN for help as food shortages worsen. Brutal, brutal news here, right? Cuba is literally begging for powdered milk because their children are starving. Now, you may have heard me talk on a number of occasions about my buddy Ruben. He's the Cuban guy that came from Havana, Cuba on the back of a jet ski and made it to Key West and changed his life here in America. And he has family in Cuba and he's there right now. And I called him the other day, well, he called me the other day, and we spoke for a couple of minutes and he was telling me how difficult it was and how, you know, any construction projects, any repairs around the house that he had to do, he had to bring his own supplies in his suitcase because there's nowhere to get them on the island. It's very difficult. And he said even food. At one point, they were even having trouble finding chicken because he went there for a visit and then came home. And then the day he got back, he was told his mom was going to pass. So he went back to be with his mom in her final moments. And then they had a repast. And as they had this gathering with the family, they tried to get some food and it was very difficult to get food. And he had money. It's just there was no food available. And again, this is anecdotal stuff that he's telling me. But then I see an article in Yahoo News where Cuba's government has, for the first time, asked the United Nations food program for help as their food shortages are getting worse on the communist-run island. This is, again, the Yahoo News piece. The World Food Program said it had received an unprecedented official request from the Cuban government for help providing powdered milk to children under the age of 7. The request is a sign of seriousness in Cuba's economic crisis, as well as a shortage of milk, fuel, medicines. Everything's running low. The World Food Program confirmed to the Spanish news agency EFE that it had been approached by the Cuban government to continue the monthly delivery of 35 ounces of milk for girls and boys under the age of 7 throughout the entire country. The World Food Program said it already started delivering the powdered milk to the island, and other basic foods are also provided to Cubans at a subsidized price through ration books, and they also have delays with those supplies. So the system was first introduced back in 1962 when Fidel Castro started, you know, falling apart because the United States imposed sanctions on the island, which exacerbated a lot of these shortages. Now, I don't know if that's necessarily true because not all of the food in Cuba comes from the United States, and nor does it have to, right? And we have to keep in mind, the only thing that the United States did was say that we're not going to do business with a communist country. So they put an embargo into place. That doesn't mean that Cuba couldn't get supplies from any other country. Right. So when they say that there's a food shortage because of the United States embargo, that in itself is a communist talking point. And that's what we hear all the time. You hear about the blockade. You hear about the imperialist Yankees that are out there and everybody in Cuba is suffering. And this is how they teach them to hate the Americans in Cuba and to love the communists. They tell them that you're hungry today because of the Americans, as if it was the Americans' job for you to get food, just like they do with Hamas. See the trend? If I were living in Hamas in the Gaza Strip, I would say, is it Israel's job for me to have electricity? Is it Israel's job for me to have clean water? Is it Israel's job to do anything that I'm entrusting you to do as my elected government? Of course not. I don't go to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to complain about my constitutional rights. Nobody does that. You know, if you live in Birmingham, Alabama, you're not going to go to Chattanooga, Tennessee to lodge your official complaint when you don't live there. But this is the logic that the communists use. Marxism 101, blame somebody else for your oppression. Anyway, the Cuban government continues to blame the ongoing U.S. sanctions for the dire state of their economy, but critics say government management is behind the current economic crisis, the worst in three decades. Of course it is. Communism kills. It's a deadly system that cannot survive without capitalism somewhere. That's why it doesn't work. It has never worked. That's why they end up killing people and people starve. Just read books. Anyway, last year, Prime Minister Jorge Luis Tapia Fonseca did concede that progress in making Cuba more self-sufficient was lagging and blamed Cuban workers, whom he said lacked a culture of productivity. So he's saying now the Cubans are lazy, and that's why we're suffering. It's better than blaming the Americans, the imperialist colonizers, right? Anyway, he says work is needed to produce food. We all expect to be sent food, but we do nothing to produce it. That was last July. Shortages of milk have become worse since the business within the country has been dire. And that's a warning from Betsy Diaz. She's the commerce minister. And she's saying that deliveries for children and the supplies for kids aged 6 months to 2 years old have all been delayed. Delayed by who? China? Because they're not getting it from the U.S. So they're getting deliveries. We're going to blame the U.N. now? This is my point. This blame game. Why not look in the mirror and blame yourselves? Why not say, hey, let's allow people to own these properties and run actual businesses outside of Havana where you can profit from tourism all across the island? They would never do that. They want to own everything. That's the damn problem. Anyway, milk isn't the only thing Cubans are struggling to get a hold of. A shortage of fuel led to the annual May Day parade, arguably the biggest annual mass celebration on the island, being canceled last year. So since last May, we're coming up on April, so that's almost a year now. And since last Friday, the fuel that's available on the island will cost five times as much as it did just about a month earlier. So how about that? And they have ongoing problems with electricity, turning off public lighting as they have an energy crisis. This is the example, right? This is the Green New Deal in action. This is what Joe Biden is eventually going to do with America. Now, people say, oh, come on, Rich, Joe Biden's not going to do this with America. Why not? He's doing all the same things. He's not taking state control, but he's using state control to make sure that we don't have any. Right? We used to be energy dominant. Now we're not. Same difference. You end up with a government that's totally in control and responsible for the lack of resources. We can call it American communism, or as the great one Mark Levin pointed out in his book, American Marxism. It's going to work a little bit differently in the U.S. than it does in Venezuela, than it does in Cuba, and the way it does in China. Although we're probably going to look a lot more like China than anybody else if we keep it up. Anyway, that's not the only place suffering. Look at this. Violence in Haiti is on the rise. Police are being attacked with machetes as gangs wreak havoc in Port-au-Prince. And there's been sightings of cannibalism in Haiti. Now, why are people eating people? I don't know. But it says the gangs have been seen cutting police officers with machetes as they cry for help. Haiti is in a state of chaos as violent gang members attack police officers. And violence has plagued the country's capital of Port-au-Prince. But the situation's escalated drastically as the prime minister, this is probably the third or fourth since I've been an adult to resign. Ariel Henry has resigned as prime minister. State of emergency has been declared in Haiti, and the capital is now under control of the gangs. Now, who's behind the gangs? I don't know. If they're actual gangs, if they're foreign influence from a different government, our government, who knows? But the current government is in there. Maybe those are citizens that have had enough with government corruption, and they're the ones stepping up. Could be. I don't know. I really don't know. This is a pretty vague report, but it alludes to some reports of cannibalism. And this is, again, what happens when you have political corruption run amok. I don't know about you, but I don't envy this in the least. Looking at a photo here, it looks like a literal war zone. Anyway, folks, we're going to come back and discuss some music. We're going to talk about the Trump sneakers a little bit and a couple more things. So don't go anywhere. I'm Rich Valdez.
This is America.
The 45th president, Donald Trump, thinks it's an honor to speak with Rich Valdez.
Oh, very good. Mr. Co-screener.
Yeah. Well, it's an honor. Thanks, Rich.
The honor is all yours. Conservative talk with a dash of sofrito. Now, here's Rich Valdez.
All right, America, welcome back. And speaking of Donaldus Magnus, El Trompito, you've probably heard by now that he released a pair of high-top sneakers at SneakerCon in Philly just about 2 weeks ago. And what's interesting about it is they sold out immediately. There were like 50 pairs of gold ones or I think 200 pairs in total of everything. And if I'm right, 200 pairs, I believe there was like three or four different styles. And the gold high top one is the one that everybody was looking to get. He used the same company that Nike uses to make the Air Force One, company called Off-White. And this is what he did. He took it right to the culture that identifies themselves as sneakerheads, who save up as much money as they can, and they buy the most expensive sneakers to be rare, and they try to walk without wrinkling their toes so they don't get any crinkles, creases in their shoes. It's really, it's quite a thing. Quite a thing to watch. My daughter is a little bit of a sneaker collector, and it's a little crazy, honestly. You look at how much money they spend on these things sometimes. But ultimately, I get it. I understand how fashion works. I understand how rare items work, and you know, the more rare it is, the better. However, Fat Joe, the rapper from the Bronx, probably one of the most famous Puerto Rican rappers out there, he took to Instagram to do his unboxing video to say, hey, look, that he has a pair of the Trump Never Surrender gold Trump 45s, or some people call them the J6s for January 6th. But either way, Fat Joe, so he does this unboxing video, and he's bragging about how he just had to have them for the love of the game, for being a sneaker collector. And I want you to hear how it went.
They think I'm fronting. But listen, I have thousands and thousands and thousands of pair of sneakers. When everybody flipped on Kanye, I went and bought the two most exclusive Kanyes ever.
First of all, they got
him the sneakers. No, I ain't doing all that. Just give me one of the sneakers. I'm not.
Just show him the box first, what it says. It's friends and family. There's only 50 of these.
I got to get my hands on them. Once again,
the number on the top.
I'm not a Trumper. I dislike Trump. I'm not voting for him. Not now, not never. But I'm a sneaker collector into the art. So I had to find these.
Now, he goes into how the mayor's going to call him and how everybody's going to call him. And he already knows he's going to get the backlash, and he's getting it. He's getting all sorts of people saying, listen, if you wanted to collect them for the love of being a sneaker collector and having a piece of history, you know, the first president to ever release a pair of high-top sneakers, then go ahead and buy them and don't put them on Instagram and let, you know, all of your followers know that you have these things. And I think there's a point there, right? If you don't like the guy, don't do it. But it seems to me like Fat Joe wanted to, you know, catch some shine here. He wanted to show off that he's got them. And look, I don't blame him for that. When there's only 50 pairs of these out there, they're hard to get. I've got a bid on one. I'm hoping to get them. I think they said I should have them by May, but we'll see. But my point is, I know that it's a rare item and it's cool. It's a novelty. So it's like, yeah, I want a pair too. So I get it. He goes to, you know, he owns a sneaker store in New York in addition to his big music company and his own music career. But the followers started unfollowing Fat Joe and saying that he was a sellout and that he was in effect promoting Trump and putting his sneaker on a video and doing an entire unboxing video. And even when his friend is telling him in the video, he's like, yeah, tell him it's a numbered, you know, you have one of a 50 pairs and blah, blah, blah. He's like, no, I'm not doing all that, in an effort to make it seem like he doesn't like Trump. And look, I get it. But it seems to be backfiring, right? What he meant to be like, hey, look at this cool, rare pair of sneakers I've got, isn't happening. Turns out that he now has gotten so many hate messages. Listen to this.
Everybody's going to call me and say, you wilding out, Joe. Why you got the Trump? Look, May is the first one. Joe, I'm a sneaker collector. I don't know what none of these guys did. I collect sneakers. The rarer, the better. No, I didn't pay for these sneakers. Sorry. I didn't pay for these sneakers. They knew I had to have them because I'm the biggest in the game.
Now, somebody who obviously wanted him to have those sneakers, somebody paid for them, unless Trump said, make sure you get a pair, send them over to Fat Joe. I know, he's a big Democrat, but send it to him because he's not going to be able to resist putting them on Instagram, showing them off. They're beautiful, they're big, they're gold, they're Trump. Right? Maybe that was the plan. And he said, make sure Fat Joe gets a pair from me, El Trumpito. I don't know how it went, but I do know that everybody who has a pair is spending at least $400 or whatever the cost was. So we say all of that and we look at all of that to say, in life and in business, there's a reality right now. Fat Joe probably really doesn't like Donald Trump. Probably doesn't like me. And I don't think I've ever met him. But the point I'm making is, Fat Joe's a businessman. He realizes that people like me, the beginning of this program starts with a few seconds of a Fat Joe song, Lean Back. And he has popular music. He realizes that people, whether they are from one walk of life or another, are going to be fans of his music. And that for the next 4 years, he's likely going to have to deal with Trump. Or at least there's a possibility that he's going to have to deal with Trump in one way or another. Or these sneakers. And do you want to be on the side of history where some guy named Donald Trump made sneakers while he was running for president and released them at the sneaker convention, and you're a big sneaker collector and sneaker aficionado, and you don't have a pair? Right? He didn't want to be left out in the cold, and I get that. So my question, I guess, for all of you, if you want to chime in on social media, at Rich Valdez with an S, at Rich Valdez, is who's wrong here? Are the followers of Fat Joe wrong because he's supporting the enemy? So this would, in effect, be like, I don't know, think of a big conservative actor or entertainer that decided to get an Obama sneaker, let's say. Would that be sacrilege? Would it be heresy? Or would it be like, no, you know what? I happen to be a sneaker collector. I own a sneaker store where I sell expensive sneakers. And I wanted this for my private collection. And then would the argument hold up? Like, I don't know who this conservative actor would be. Tim Allen or even John Rich, country stars, you know, Jason Aldean, these guys. If one of them bought an Obama sneaker. Now, something tells me they probably wouldn't because they don't like sneakers. They're like cowboy boot kind of guys. But if, let's say it was an Obama cowboy boot, you know, would that be sacrilege? Maybe, maybe not. So I'm just curious to know, and I'd love for you guys to chime in online. Let me know, at Rich Valdez with an S. One thing we know for sure, I don't have a pair of the Trump sneakers yet, but when I do, I will also do an unboxing and be all over social media with it because I'll probably be the only guy on my whole block that has a pair. And I think that's pretty cool. Anyway, speaking of Trump, he won big on Super Tuesday, won every race except Vermont, which Nikki Haley won because Democrats were allowed to vote in it. And Democrats voted in the Republican primary so that Nikki Haley could win Vermont. It's the only one she won on Super Tuesday. On Monday, she won the primary for the District of Columbia. And on Wednesday, she decided to drop out of the race. So she's out. Trump is the only candidate. There might be a few people on the ballot running against him, like write-ins, kind of like the write-ins that are beating Joe Biden, right? There's a write-in. Not even a write-in, like an undeclared that's beating. I think he got something like 70,000 or 45,000 votes in Minnesota last night. Undeclared or uncommitted really, really did well against Joe Biden. And we'll see how that plays out. I think ultimately it doesn't go well for Biden. It just doesn't seem like he has a lot of enthusiasm. So the question will be, do people hate Trump more than they fear Biden and his lack of ability? I think the answer is no, because ultimately people are going to say, give me Trump. Give me Trump all day because you know what you get with Trump. You get a lot of bravado. You get a lot of attitude. You get a lot of heft. But ultimately you get results. You get a stable economy. You get people like Putin and others that aren't messing around, that realize that they're dealing with somebody that has, you know, their wits about them. That isn't Joe El Baboso Biden. Or his sidekick, Que Mala Eres. So anyway, we're going to come right back, wrap this thing up. Don't go anywhere.
This is America. This is America. He's making podcasting great again. This is America with Rich Valdez.
So I want to talk a little bit about this article I saw in the Washington Post. And it's about the genre of music called reggaeton. Now, I know you're thinking, Rich, I don't tune into This is America to hear about reggaeton. You're right, you don't. But you do like to learn about popular culture and things that are happening. And I want to share a couple of things because I thought this was interesting. And the headline is How Reggaeton Became the Sound of Global Pop. And I thought that's really what caught my eye, was that this is the fastest growing genre of music on the planet. I was at coffee one day, breakfast we call it, desayuno, with my brother. And we go to a Colombian spot lately because the Cuban place was sold. And we get a cafe con leche and we sit there and we shoot the breeze and sometimes we'll have some food with it. But we're enjoying our coffee. And there was a song playing that I was familiar with. And I was like, oh, good song. And I think I mentioned, I've heard it before. And he was like, oh, did you hear it when you were in Colombia? Since we were in a Colombian restaurant, and Colombia is a very big generator of reggaeton songs. And I said, possibly. And then he went on to tell me how he had taken a cruise to, I don't know if it was the Amalfi Coast and Mykonos, but I know he went to Greece and to Italy, and he went to Rome for a little bit. And he said he was at a beautiful little sidewalk cafe in Italy and having a wonderful cappuccino. And when he paid attention after, taking in the robust flavor, he said he was listening to reggaeton. And again, reggaeton, just for anybody who's new to this and hasn't heard this genre, this is like reggae infused with the most recent evolutions in hip hop, right? It's about 90 beats per second. It's a very quick tempo for a reggae beat, which is usually a lot slower. And combines, a melodic singing with almost like a rapping singing, depending on the style of the artist. And anyway, it's a very interesting thing. And it has a lot of roots, again, in reggae, which comes from Jamaica. And there was a lot of Jamaican workers working on the Panama Canal way back in the day. And there were also people from Puerto Rico that were commuting into Panama to work on the canal. And in fact, I am a product of such a union. Back in the days, back in the 1940s, late 40s, early 50s, my grandfather was a United States Army man, and he was stationed in the Panama Canal. And he met a Panamanian woman, my grandmother, and they were married, and they had my mom. And so my mom is half Panamanian. You're learning something new. And it makes me a quarter Panamanian. And this genre was born in Panama, where they started doing reggae in Spanish, because that's the official language in Panama. And it became very popular in Puerto Rico. And they started bringing the Panamanian artists to perform in the nightclubs in Puerto Rico, and they called it reggae en español, Spanish reggae. And then it became known as Puerto Rican reggae. And then they also did Spanish rap. And they infused it, and it's just a huge genre. Anyway, that was my little explanation. DJ, let's hear a little bit of that so that the people know what's going on. And there you go. You hear the snare and the drum beat a little bit faster. It's infused, a little bit of techno sound. This one has a little bit more of like a house sound to it. Anyway, the point that I wanted to bring up here to give you a little bit of this was that there's a huge artist right now named Bad Bunny. He's like, I think he was the most streamed artist in 2023. Like he beat the Beatles and Taylor Swift and Michael Jackson on the Spotify streaming service. And this was a big deal. So this article starts with the success of Bad Bunny, but then goes into everything else. And it says, when Bad Bunny opened up the 2023 Grammys, it was history in the making, not the least because the Puerto Rican rapper was up for Album of the Year, the first entirely Spanish language project to garner a nomination in the English category of the Grammys. But the lively performance was a milestone for the reggaeton genre, the once underground genre that emerged out of Panama before taking form in the early 90s in New York and Puerto Rico. And it says here, it was center stage at the Gringo Grammys. And And it goes on to say a couple of things. But what's really interesting is that, you know, its offshoots include like Latin trap and what they call música urbano, which is urban music, which is a very similar genre that combines a little bit more of a club type of disco type of sound, more modern. And it's literally the go-to, right? If anybody wants to have a number one hit, they want to get Bad Bunny on their song. That's kind of how it works. It's kind of like, you know, back in the days or even a couple of years ago, doing a duet with Taylor Swift or something like that, or Justin Bieber even a few years back before that. And this article, and I won't read it all, but I just wanted to share it with you because I really found it interesting. I thought this was something only I was interested in. I see that the Washington Post has it front and center here. They describe it as a complex story of a simple sound, a beat that resisted definition and grew over the years. Anyway, what I wanted to mention was I just thought it was fascinating how this has grown, how there's now, you know, different music competitions. One of my producers the other day told me he's a fan of something called Eurovision, and that Italy submitted their official entry into the Eurovision singing competition, right, music competition, and they put an Italian reggaeton song. And it's no longer this little subgenre. And I've mentioned in the past that this little subgenre was banned by Governor Ricardo Rosselló in Puerto Rico. I'm going to say in the early 2000s, he literally said that they couldn't play it on any of their airwaves and no arena or stadium could rent the place out for a concert. So it became a real underground thing, like speakeasies. People were having underground concerts and it became part of the culture. And the reason that they cited for this was they said it's too raunchy, too much talk about, you know, short shorts and risque dancing. So they said, oh, if that's what you don't like, we can get a lot raunchier. And they did. And it became just known for being very, very beyond risque in its lyrics. And people loved it. And they would have these street parties, just pop-ups, where people would show up and the artists would come and perform. And during one of the blackouts, during the ousting of the, not this current governor of Puerto Rico, but right before that, he was the son of the governor I just mentioned. His name is also Ricardo Rosselló, but he was Ricky Rosselló Jr. And interesting, there was an entire concert that they did with like generators and whatnot during one of the blackouts between Bad Bunny and another artist named Arcángel, originally from New York, a guy named Austin Santos. And they stood on top of the, I guess that's called a roof. Like when you go to get gas at your Gulf gasoline station, you know, if it's raining, you don't get wet from that little overhang that's above the gas pumps. And they used that as their stage, and they shut down the streets, and there had to be, I don't know, 5,000 people there. And it's all on YouTube, and it's amazing. And they made it, the actual official music video for one of their songs. They filmed it there. They have lights and everything. It was just really, really, I thought, clever. But they used it as part of the catalyst to march to the governor's mansion to eventually oust this guy, the son of the former governor, who was also governor because of his handling of Hurricane Maria. But they had an animus against the whole family for outlawing their genre of music. And it just goes to show you how I think people are resilient, right? People will do what they want to do, and they're going to enjoy what they want to enjoy. We saw it with Prohibition here in the United States. I suspect that we're going to continue to see it with everything here that they tried to prohibit. During COVID, I think that's when a lot of the divisiveness started with people, where they were like, oh, you can't go anywhere, you can't have more than 10 people, you can't have more than 6 feet apart, blah, 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 right? People started throwing COVID parties, and the other people who were, you know, anti were saying, yeah, these are super spreaders, you're killing grandma. It was just such an interesting time to be alive. And it reminds me of this, and it reminds me of Prohibition. And I think when you tell people they can't do something that is otherwise normal for them to do, like listen to a song, dance at a party, go to a restaurant like COVID, people are going to rebel, because rebellion is a natural part of life. And I don't think people want to rebel. They can, but they do when they're forced into a corner. And ultimately, I feel like whether it's music or COVID or anything else, I feel like the current administration, the Biden administration, with their bad economic policies, inflation, everything costs more, with the border, with people getting hurt because of illegal aliens that are here hurting people, a lack of accountability on violent crime where people are just giving everybody a pass because they say that we need to reform the prison system. There's too many young black men in prison. So if any young black men commit crimes, we're going to now elect prosecutors that won't charge them with any crimes or downplay those crimes so that we don't add any more black men to what they call the mass incarceration system. It sounds like it makes sense to them, but in reality, you're teaching people that it's okay to reward their bad behavior. And I opened the show with a story about eight young people, all African-American, killing another African-American. Black-on-black crime. And this is heartbreaking to me that this woman, 25 years old, mother of one, beautiful little girl, is now an orphan. Going to be raised by her grandmother if she's lucky. This isn't where we need to be in life. Right? I think we need to a little more reggaeton, right? A little more partying in the streets, you know, raunchy as the lyrics might be. It's always a good beat. It's always a good time. People, I think, need to have fun a little bit and stop looking at the negativity of life and stop looking at what we don't agree on and start looking at what we do agree on. How can we get along? Where can we make common ground? Because otherwise, we're headed towards inevitable conflict. And I don't think anybody wants this conflict. I mean, there's probably a handful of people that, you know, and I know a few that are like, civil war. They want it in their innermost part of their soul because they feel like it ends with something good for them. Like they get rid of a problem. You don't get rid of the problem. I think we try to get rid of the Confederacy, right, of racism in the South. I don't think that happened. I don't think it happened at all. We might have gotten rid of slavery, but we definitely didn't get rid of the overarching issue, which is, you know, hate. And I think we're headed in that direction if we don't start paying attention now. So my prescription, have a good party, whatever you like. If you like 60s music, great. If you like 90s music, great. You like reggaeton, great. Whatever you like, have a drink, have a party, enjoy yourselves, and look for common ground. Because America needs you right now more than she's ever needed you. And the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good people like you to sit there and do nothing. And that's why I always say, if you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything. Hasta la próxima. Until the next time, I'm Rich Valdez, and this is America.
This is America.
The Bigger Pockets portfolio of podcasts are worthy of your investment.
We're having a real conversation as real estate investors.
New episodes available every day.
It's important to buy where it makes money and not necessarily where you want to travel to.
Bigger Pockets, On the Market, Rookie Real Estate, or Money Podcast.
The purpose of flipping is to create more cash so then you can reinvest into other types of properties.
The Bigger Pockets podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen.